rifling through those long boxes.
It's gotta be here. Aha! Here it is!
And bagging those books.
I'm out of bags and boards again.
Welcome to your home for Star Wars comics.
The Cosmic Force Podcast.
A Youtini Podcast Network production.
And now, here are your hosts, Parker Kirk, Caleb Laminek, and Jacob Bosch.
Welcome everyone to The Cosmic Force, your weekly Star Wars comics podcast from the Youtini Podcast Network, released Wednesdays on all your favorite podcasting platforms. Be sure to follow us on there and leave us a review. It helps everyone find the show. Thanks everyone for tuning in this week. If you want to support the show additionally, you can head on over to patreon.com/Youtini, where for as little as $5 a month, you can gain exclusive access to the entire Youtini Podcast Network of shows. But with that out of the way, let's hop into it. Oz, Caleb, we got a double issue today of some nice High Republic and some Star Wars. So how you all feeling?
Good. We got kind of a, you know, yeah, I know I've been complaining about it for the last couple of weeks, but I finally do have an actual house to move into. So this weekend is nothing but box day. So I'll be, it's like Christmas came late. It's Boxing Day, right? My Saturday with nothing but pushing boxes around. But no, it's exciting times. We got a kind of a fun double header on two kind of opposite ends of the spectrum here, you know, between the Star Wars and the High Republic. So we got some interesting times here. What about you, Oz? How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm feeling good. Yeah, I liked both issues. I don't have anything super exciting going, like buying a house. But life is solid. Bad Batch was great this week, so I'm still riding on that. I still don't know what we released, but the March 6th episode was really good. Check out me and Jacob talking about it on Bounty Hunt. We're doing that every week. So whatever week it is, listen to us for your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So Bad Batch has been fun. Maybe, yeah, again, Caleb, if you want to binge that entire series, maybe we can get you on at some point. You got like 6 weeks to go or something like that.
Perfect. I don't know. Yo, heck, just watch an episode cold and
you know, that might be an interesting way of doing things. Just
this
so
week
we
would not
really
have been a good time to do that.
Yeah, well, and next week's a double episode, so probably not a great time. I don't know.
We'll figure it out. we'll find the quote unquote filler episode and be like, Caleb, come here.
This is the one.
Sure. Yeah, I definitely don't have anything else going on in my life.
Yeah, totally. Hey, by the time we get to that point, you will be moved in, ready to go. But speaking of ready to go, what have we all been reading? That was the worst transition ever. But Oz, what are you doing?
Well, Defy the Storm just came out this week, new High Republic YA. So I started that. I haven't gotten very far into it, but that unfortunately means I had to put Dune back on the shelf for a bit. So it gets punted down the road a little bit longer. But more importantly, yesterday, Ultimate X-Men number 1 by Peach Momoko came out, and dudes, it's tight. It's very peachy, except that it has words.
It has dialogue.
We were wondering for a long time, it's got dialogue. It does not feel yet, at least, like an X-Men book, so don't go into it expecting X-Men, despite what's on the cover. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's a really cool story. I wish Peach the best. She's fantastic. And it's cool to see her doing something different than just like a little 8-page horror. There's still plenty of that. It's still very reminiscent of her Black, White, and Red and her visions. But yeah, it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, I'm very curious, just like, no, like having read the kind of like opening, like kickoff to this new Ultimate stuff, and I'm on delay from Marvel Unlimited, I'm very curious how her style is going to meld with what these other books are doing, because I mean, like,
yeah, so far it doesn't.
Yeah, okay. Okay, that's kind of
like
I thought.
It's not tying into that yet at all. I'm sure it will, which I'm fine with. We have been in the era of crossovers for the past like 5 years, crossovers, multiverse, all that with the MCU, with what Star Wars has been doing both on TV and in comics. Just like, let a story be itself. Mm-hmm. That's what's so refreshing about things like 8 Billion Genies and these other creator-owned books we talk about from now on and again. And so Ultimate X-Men, it really just feels like they were like, hey, Peach, do you want to do a book? And it just has to be vaguely X-Men. And that's the only guidance.
I would love for when they eventually do have these characters cross over into these other books, if it's just like like Spider-Verse style, where it's just like one character that is completely like clashing art style against everything else in the book, and it's just like the Peach kind of like watercolor character.
Yeah, they there was a book called Image United back in 2009 that was going to be a crossover of all the Image books with all the different artists, so like Todd McFarlane doing Spawn, Rob Liefeld doing his characters, and they were, you know, mailing the pages back and forth so each could draw their own characters. I think it only got through three issues before it just totally fell apart, and for years they were like, all right, we're going to finish it. It never happened. It's not great.
Right.
But it's like, cool, yeah, because everyone's drawing.
Cool idea.
Definitely.
Yeah, but that's why no one else has done it yet, because they realized, oh man, the execution is so much of a pain. Plus, like, the artist, like, pay split for those issues. Well, you know, I'll get 1/12% of it, and you can get 1/6% of that.
Especially on those where it's like they own the characters, so they're not getting page rates. They're getting, like, IP ownership. I don't know. I guess they did it with... High Republic Adventures we talked about last
week. Yeah, with the Nick Brokenshire.
Told about.
Yep. Yeah, but that's just splitting it two ways. Yeah, like exactly. All the images.
Yeah. Like, anyway, Caleb, what have you been reading?
All right, this is going to be a weird poll, but a while ago, Jacob once said that, you know what my favorite trope is? Is when, like, hey, let's be gay and do crime together.
Okay.
That's interesting.
I might have found one of the earliest representations of that, and that's in, I kid you not, The Counting Monte Cristo.
Oh God,
there's like legitimately a scene where like two mademoiselle's like, hey, I'm going to take my music instructor here, who's my same age and also female, and we're going to go tour around Belgium and just leave my whole family alone. And it's very obvious that they're being gay and doing crime together in the Belgians.
I thought you were going to be like, I read like an Alyssa Wong story outside of Star Wars, and you know, I'm just, nope, you're still on your classic literature.
I'm almost done with it, but Count Monte Cristo is like, it's like seen like the genesis. It's like the Pangea of every single like drama you've ever heard of. It's got lost babies, you know, poison, you know, decades long to revenge plots. There's so much like listening and reading it and going through. It's like, man, this is like the nucleus from which all other like soap operas took every bit of DNA from. It's crazy.
Interesting. Well,
and apparently be gay and do crimes. Who knew?
Yeah, that what was is a, the what is the next Penguin Classics on the list for you?
I don't know. I think I'm going to like, I might go back to Star Wars just so I can like wash my brain in some, I wouldn't say trash, but you know, with some like low literature, some like just like crap. Then I might just do do Steinbeck.
I was going like, to guess. My guess was going to be Dickens, but that works.
I don't really like Dickens. Like the few ones I've read, like. I know I just went for two massive books, but you know Dickens was paid by the word?
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good gig.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a really good gig, especially when you can exfunctuate and add unnecessary syllables.
Well, the one classic I can recommend if you're doing Steinbeck is The Pearl. It's fantastic, and it's like 80 pages, so it's like an
afternoon. I like some of that.
Yeah,
I need to do that. I need to get my Goodreads numbers up. I'm falling behind, I think, so that might be something to check out. But personally for me, I also am on the Defy the Storm train. I luckily did not have class this morning, so I read about like 100 pages, which I'm up to just shy of 200. So I think I'll probably be done by the end of the weekend easily. I'm enjoying it so far. I definitely get the comments of it feeling like a sequel to Out of the Shadows and Mission to the Disaster at the same time. So, if you like those stories, you know, probably gonna like this one.
It's definitely, I wish I had kind of refreshed myself on phase one YAs. I mean, the Midnight Horizon I got because that book is one of my favorites, but the Out of the Shadows and Into the Dark or whatever those two
are. I am realizing that, I know Out of the Shadows not very well at all as I read this book.
But it's for Nestor Rowe. We've got Reese Silas in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then our boy Amadeo Azazo from Tales of Light and Life. And actually, Vernon Emery had a Tales of Light and Life story, right?
Not Emery, but Vern did. Yeah. And I actually, there are timeline nice notes to kind of compare that I'm prepping for Trev. So,
oh, excellent.
With that Tales story. Anyways, it's been a good book so far. So,
News. We have a lot of news to get through, so we're just going to start blasting through it. One of them kind of actually came out at like right after we recorded last week, I believe, which is Edge of Balance Volume 3 has been announced. Coming out August 13th from Shima Shinya and DJO with art from Mizuki Sakikibara. And this one is following Lila Toriasi, who has been left behind or purposely left herself behind on Banshee in the, I believe, in the Occlusion Zone. But then on the other side, Arkoff is currently trying to piece together the mystery of the past, probably involving the Leveler and the Nameless and Azwynrail.
Yeah.
It looks dope.
Yeah, man. And Precedent, at the end of Precedent, I believe Lily gets the call, the recall from the Jedi.
Yeah.
Says, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
She stays behind. Guys, we all know this is going to be a banger. And the cover is probably the best of all four yet.
Yeah, it's very good.
Arkoff on it. And speaking of the cover, what was it mentioned in the interview?
Yeah, so in the like little like snippet StarWars.com had, they're like, you know, we really wanted to do like a four-season style of the covers like we did. Like fall, I think, or I think it was fall
volume
for
fall.
Fall, spring for volume two, or no, summer for volume two, I think, and then winter for volume three. But they did not mention Precedent, which implies if they're doing four seasons.
Yeah, well, in Precedent, I hadn't noticed until we read this that Precedent's cover style is like totally different.
Yes.
I mean, I hadn't noticed it was different, but
it really feels separate now in hindsight. So it seems like we might get a volume four in addition, maybe.
Which would follow kind of the pacing of phase one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Edge of Balance, we got, what, 3 or 4 months? This is the thing
it's out August 13th. So we got 5 months till this comes out.
I can go ahead and say now we will be doing an episode about it.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
maybe one, two or three.
I was like looking back from at volume two real quickly to kind of see where things left off. And one thing that really excites me was the young, like the younglings, is like Vivna and
the other one.
Was it Kieran or was Kieran the one that died?
I think Kieran was the one that
died. Yeah.
I don't know. There's two little younglings. One's a Togruta and one's a human boy. And at the very end of the thing, they're getting sent all the way to Coruscant after the great disaster, or after Starlight Falls. And they're like, you know, we're going to go away and become Padawans. We're going to come back and be strong and, like, you know, show you that we're like really good Jedi, Lily. And it's like, they're now showing art of them being Padawans. They got sent back to Coruscant. They probably got caught up in the Guardian protocols and were rushed through all this training. So it's gonna be hard hitting, I think. So, anyways, that's some news. We have way more news though. Thrawn trilogy, the Legends Thrawn trilogy, is getting a trade paperback collection in July that is collecting all of the adaptations of Heir to the Empire, Dark Forces Rising, and The Last Command. And I think
it
had mention of like some bonus content of like some behind the scenes like art style kind of type stuff.
Yeah, and stuff that hadn't been in the New Republic omnibus.
Well, because it's a weird collection to make. I mean, obviously we know why they're doing it with Thrawn being popular right now, but they have an epic collection with all of these adaptations together, and we have an omnibus that's coming out in like July that has all of this content too. So it feels weird to also be doing a 18-issue trade paperback plus bonus
basically
content.
Like an essential collection or whatever they're called.
Yeah, but epic collection. Yeah,
epic collection. But just the, I don't know, I think it kind of makes sense. Because the other is for like if you're collecting them all in order, whereas this is a better for just someone jumping in, wants to read the Thrawn.
That's going to be a beefy trade paperback though. That's like even think of like Yoda's 10 and that's the biggest we've got.
I was about to say 18-issue trade paperback seems like an oxymoron. It seems like they'd have to at least split that in two.
That is going to be bigger than the Phase 2 omnibus, dude.
Oh, considerably, yeah. And also, those issues are probably more pages than
definitely more text. I don't know about more pages, but definitely more text.
I've got a few Marvel trades from those same Epic Collection lines that are of a similar size, and it's a nice size. And then I've got some like actual like gigantic like 1,000-page paperbacks, but those are
right.
I think it's going to be a great size. I might pick this up, even though
we'll see.
I haven't bought any previous Legends comics. This just kind of feels like a good one to have.
I will not, because I did order that omnibus that also I think includes all the Dark Empire stuff as well. But
yeah, that makes sense.
So we got that coming in July. We also have a Darth Vader Modern Era Epic Collection Shadows and Secrets, which is out in November. This is, so they've announced a few modern Epic collections. None of them have hit stores yet, but we have one for Star Wars 2015 announced and one for the Kanan Maxi Series announced. This one, I don't think we know exactly what's in it yet, but Splash Page was predicting the first 12 issues of the 2015 series plus an annual and plus something else potentially, maybe just guessing by page counts. So yeah, I mean, all right.
That's cool. That's cool. It's a, I mean, for people who don't have those original trades, it's great. I think 12 is a great size for a trade paperback. That's what Watchmen, I mean, Watchmen is 400 pages, so it's a little bigger, but I'm not gonna grab this. It doesn't add anything other than like looking a little better on the shelf because it's not.
Yeah, it'd be a little larger. Because the Epic Collection, I think like the format is bigger too, right? Like the page size.
They're just trade paperbacks.
Okay, but I mean, still, it'll be nice for, again, if you don't have this already. It's also interesting because this is, you know, back in the day in early Marvel comics for us, we had the hardcover volumes that were basically two trade paperbacks slapped together.
Yeah, this is, I bet, the exact
same content, more or less. So,
and then we'll see what they do after this with Vader Down. If they
because if they've done 12 of each already, are you going to do one that kind of
just like a Vader?
We'll
see.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Anyways, there's that one final thing that's not a comic, but we're doing it anyways because I don't know, we can. Just got announced today is High Republic Tempest Breaker. It is a audio drama from Kevin Scott, which is, the cover came out today. It's following Lorna D, Keeve Trennis, and Avar Chris. Obviously, we're going to talk about that because these are all characters that prominently featured in the High Republic comics over the past couple of years. But that's out December 3rd, which is crazy because Penguin Random House does not do things in December, like ever.
It seems like it's so far away, you know?
But, I mean, this will be after Temptation of the Force and whatever the next YA book, I can't remember what it's called, from George Mann. Something of the Nameless. I don't know.
It's interesting that they're doing
it. Nameless, maybe.
Maybe.
It seems a little odd that they're doing another audio drama focusing on Lorna D again. Like, it's because the last audio drama for Phase 1 was like Lorna D's story as well.
It was Tempest Runner, now Tempest Breaker.
I think it makes sense, like, to kind of come full circle on that.
Exactly. How many gun cocking sounds do you think we'll have in this one?
Yeah.
Trying to pull out a blast.
A lot of whining and hoarse voices.
As long as there's no wheezing and grunting.
Right. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see where this takes place as far as like alongside the comic, because based on the cast and a little bit of what Kevin said in his interview, this is like continuing the story from the comic. And I would be pretty shocked if they timed it just right. But maybe that's why it's coming out the third, is because it comes out in, but that would be like six issues. That would be maybe after issue 10, which is currently the furthest ahead number that we know is going to exist. So
it'd be cool if we kind of got like maybe like a 2 months break from the comic for this to kind of come out and let people digest it. And then like maybe like a time skip in the the comic reboots or something like that. I was keeping the same number, please. But
although, actually, in the back,
High Republic 2025.
Yeah, in the back of this issue, it only goes to 8. So
I think 10 was from the Marvel, like if you bought the mail order Marvel thing, they would, like, the subscription was telling you 10 issues up front.
All right,
and I think that's where that number came from. That was a while ago, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we will see on Tempest Breaker, but that's bound to be exciting. I love more High Republic content. Let's go.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we still have so much to talk about. That was just the news, and we are almost 20 minutes in. We got a few issues to talk about today, some bangers for sure. Starting off with not the High Republic, not speaking of. We're starting off with Star Wars issue number 44, The Trial of Lando Calrissian, written by Charles Soule with pencils by, Madabek Musabekov. And colors from Rochelle Rosenberg. Caleb, what happened in this issue?
All right. In this issue, Lando finds himself on trial, surprise, surprise, for selling the talkie droid code to Jabba the Hutt due to his past exploits and overall reputation, though, in the Rebel Alliance, it's decided that they will have a closed trial.
While Lando himself is kind of resigned to his fate as a traitor and a no good Nick, Lobot confronts him and convinces him to fight for the against the charge and try to, you know, live again. And so they call in Sally Gregorio, the advocate at large. The opening arguments are not going well into our smuggler's favor, however. Things do take a turn as Mon Mothma, who is doing the responsible thing and Skyping into the meeting, was attacked and captured by a mysterious unknown force.
Dun, yeah, dun, yeah.
I'll go ahead and say it once more. This is my, I think, third or fourth time saying it. I was wrong about the Revelations short story.
Yeah.
It did not feature here, but we do see Lando's side of the conversation with his lawyer, which I think maybe you predicted, Jacob, would happen. So
I don't remember it, but I'll take the credit for sure.
Yeah, we'll see how this gets collected, but it does like fit in perfectly with that story.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to check another box off the Revelations.
I suppose that even got the whole like, have you considered it could be a Jedi mind trick?
Yeah, I love that she has one legal defense that she loves hitting, and it's like Jedi mind trick. You can't refute it. Like, what are you gonna do? It's just like her, you know, it's her ultimate. She just hits it.
Yeah, which I had never considered really, like, what a nightmare Jedi would be for the legal system. Because you can just say, well, you can't prove it wasn't.
Jedi. Did I have the proper requisite state of mind, or did someone trick my mind into committing this crime?
Of course, they're not buying it. Luke is in the audience and he's like, I'm the only person alive who knows that. And I didn't do that.
Yeah. I think stepping aside away from the trial real quick, I think obviously one of the key moments of this issue, one of the most heartfelt moments of this issue is Lando and Lobot having their conversation in Lando's cell. I still was kind of honestly shocked that Lobot had, you know, full speaking abilities back, like that he's normal again.
Well, he's talking out of his belt now.
Yeah, he has like the robot or the droid text box, speech bubble. But I think the really cool visual thing they did was we saw it called back earlier in this series, but the scene from the 2015 miniseries where they're in the escape pod leaving the Imperialis, and they're kind of just like cramped in there staring at each other across the escape pod. You kind of had a similar visual thing going on here where they're in the cell staring at each other after everything that Lando's done again. And I think that's just like a really great callback to such an emotional moment in a very good miniseries, obviously, Caleb, you know. Yeah, I thought that moment was great.
Go ahead, Caleb.
I was about to say, there's some pretty fun moments. We get more Admiral Akbar, so that's kind of fun. And hey, it's everyone's least favorite general, General Medine.
he's
here.
Yeah, so that's the scene I was going to talk about, is like the Alliance High Command was awfully quick to jumping to execution, I thought. I mean, like, I get it. He sold a pretty big secret to the Empire, but still, like, their whole thing is supposed to be the good guys, which is the speech Leia gives.
Uh-huh.
But, like, even Mon is pretty on board with, like, oh, sorry, this is the way it has to go.
Yeah.
And something tells me he's not going to get executed, but we'll find
probably not. But, well, you know, you never know. You never know.
I feel like they're kind of trying to say, like, listen, the Alliance High Command is, like, they want to be the nice guys and the good guys, but they also can't be the nice guys and good guys all the time. Like, they still have to, you know, if you sell out the rebellion, you still have to get shot and killed for such a, you know, egregious use of you know, military resources. Like, you can't just betray the rebellion and be like, oops, sorry, I'm just a rogue and scoundrel.
Yeah, one thing I really did enjoy, though, with that, like, that whole conversation ahead of time was, like, talking about how they needed to make sure that whatever government that's going to succeed after this is going to feel legitimate. And they're like, we need to go through this, you know, give him his due process, go through this thing and show the rebels that we're legit. Otherwise, how will they trust us to, like, lead a galaxy? And then, you know, just kind of showing, you know, feeling how that's going to eventually be expressed in the, like, Aftermath and Bloodlines type stories, but also, like, you have military tribunals in Ahsoka as well, where, like, Mon Mothma is, like, talking to Hera after she breaks an order or something like that. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of, and also Kazuda Ziono's dickhead dad is there, but, you know, yeah, it's kind of, I do like seeing the, like, government, politics, legal side of things, and obviously Charles Soule's an attorney, so it helps.
About to say, right. So not, while you're not our legal counsel, Jake.
I am not. Affirmatively not.
Yes. Did you see anything like that as you're reading this, like, the writer here obviously has studied and professionally practiced law in here?
Well, I don't have any experience with military trials, nor really much experience with, like, civil criminal trials generally.
Corellian code of military justice.
Yeah, not familiar. I cannot say. I don't know if that. I guess they're probably a civil law country or civil law planet, I suppose. I did, like, you know, oral advocacy is an interesting art, and seeing them again put up very silly defenses, which it's an affirmative defense. He's not saying that he didn't do it. He's saying he did it, but it's still probably not his fault, or he cannot be sued because, even though he did do it. So that's there's a fun little tidbit for you. Mm. So
good insight.
Yeah. There again, not legal advice. Hashtag.
One thing that I kind of loved, but was frustrating as we move on through the rest of the issue, is they're prepping for this trial and they're like, Mon Mothma's not going to be there in person because she's out on this mission.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of flash to it and you're like, oh, this looks like fun. And then they're like, we're not going to show you this mission.
Yeah.
They go back just 12 hours later and you're like, wait, but something cool happened. We do end up getting a little taste at the end. But that was such a little tease, was that we were going to get this cool action on this planet with all these floating orbs, Uveron, which I actually didn't look up.
It's not appeared before I checked.
It's brand new. I figured you would have. But yeah, we've got all these dudes wearing Batman suits, and they steal the Chancellor, or I don't know what her role
is. I think she's just like on the like Alliance High Command. That's the thing, right?
I don't know if they have roles. I also love that she's wearing headphones.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a strange choice.
I don't think we've ever seen on a holocall before. Like we've seen, you know, the people in the little pits of the Star Destroyers wearing headphones and stuff like that. But she's these 1970s cans on.
You know what it feels like is the like if you like ever see a clip of someone in the United Nations where they have all the translators. Yeah. But yeah, I guess maybe she's doing a secure trial. She can't let that info leak out to whoever might be listening.
And crazy that she's on this important mission apparently and still is sitting in. So that shows how important this is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Oz, literally last week you were in Vegas and Skyping in, right?
That's right. Yeah. And, sorry for any audio issues that may have come up last
week. It's fine. I worked it out.
It was a trial of its own, but not as intense as Lando's.
Yeah. I guess, like, what do we think is going to, like, what's going to happen? What's going on? Obviously, Mon Mothma, again, can't die, but, like, where's that going?
Like, is this hit squad here? Are they Imperial? Are they bounty hunters? Were they hired by the lawyer herself so that they could, you know, capture Mon Mothma and then have Lando in a heroic and like selfless attitude go and rescue her, proving his loyalty? Like, is this some like weird, extreme, long range play from the advocate here?
I had the same thought. I don't think she set it up. She seemed caught off guard by it, but I do think that Lando's going to somehow aid in Mon Mothma's release.
Yeah, this is his redemption. It's like, you know, Lando, go do your work, your magic. But we have at least two more issues of this stuff. So I think the next issue is like kind of probably the finale of the trial, and then we're getting into after that the rescue of Mon Mothma.
Because the next issue shows a stormtrooper helmet with
they're kind of wild in it with their covers right now. This one had Darth Vader on it, and Darth Vader's not in this comic book issue. So,
but he did freeze Han and Carbonite because of Lando, so there's the connection there.
I guess. The sins of Lando lay bare on this cover of this comic to right. definitely just sell more issues. That's fine. Whatever. Respect the grind. Any other, I guess, thoughts on this issue?
At the end where it's showing all the shocked faces, I'm just not noticing. Is that Cherubei and Cass Dameron?
Yes, I guess
yeah,
so, yeah.
I just noticed them as well. Like, I don't think they said anything there.
Maybe they're on the mission with Mon?
Well, no, because they're all like in the courtroom. I think my guess is since they talked about like Lando working with like the Pathfinders, maybe like Cass got brought in as a character witness or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just funny because like, I don't think they're in a single other panel. Like all these crowd shots are just sort of silhouettes.
Yeah.
And then they're there at the end. I was like, oh, hey, it's my guys. I mean, Charles Soule is a big Shara and Cass fan.
As are we.
Right. He didn't write Shattered Empire, did he? Who wrote
he did
that?
Not. I don't remember, but it's not him. I know that.
I don't know.
But yeah, any other final thoughts on this comic book?
No, I thought it was good. I was Greg Rucka. I knew it was a Marvel name. I knew. I thought it was good. We've talked a lot about these arcs back bouncing back and forth,
mm-hmm.
and I think I really like it. I kind of wish it was just doing this kind of stuff, like the Luke Crystal stuff, this, whatever else, you know, a Leia mission, and maybe skipping all those four crossovers we had.
Yeah.
I think these kind of mini adventures are really fun. We obviously, it's too late to not do those events.
Right.
Even though I did like them, don't get me wrong, but this is really cool. These sort of like mini stories, even though I know that people are talking about how crowded 4ABY is becoming.
Yes.
Or 3 to 4.
Yeah, it's whatever.
The interim time period here between 5 and 6.
Yeah. Okay, so I think probably about time we gotta move on because we got a whole nother issue to talk about. This is The High Republic issue number 4, Children of the Storm, written by Kevin Scott with art from Jim Toe and Marika Cresta and colors from Jim Campbell. Caleb, what happened in this issue?
In this issue, we meet up with a team attempting to fight through a droid swarm that keeps the OZ in place. The team being Keeve, Sarah Tarek, and Lorna D. The Ataraxia is using Lorna D's knowledge and information to kind of disrupt the droid network as they manage to slip past and get into the Nihil space. You know, but back on board, Sarah and Tarek are having communication problems as Sarah attempts to force Lorna D to tell them everything that she knows. The dysfunctional party land on the planet of, what was this, Kindoswarm, and there they find the lost Jedi archivist, Orbalin, along with the injured Jedi, Gornal. There they have confirmation that Master Skeer did survive the fall of Starlight and is held up in a nearby temple where Keeve and Lorna decide to go and confront him. Well, Keeve decides and brings Lorna along.
Bum, bum, bum. Were we shocked by... Obviously, we knew Skeer was alive at this point. Were we shocked by the other people anymore? Or is it just kind of like... It's like, another one.
Legitimately, like, I thought Orbalin was dead, but when he came back, I was like, oh, crap, this guy. But it, like, of all the ones that they're bringing back, it makes the perfect sense. Yeah, you shot the ooze guy in the face, and yet he still managed to ooze away. And I had forgotten how much I liked him, despite how little screen time he gets. Like, you know, in these, like, couple panels that he's here, it's like, oh, yeah, this is a really fun Jedi. He has a fun sense of humor. He's a wild, wacky, like, power being, like, a literal ooze and can kind of splort all over the place. I like how he turns himself into, like, a hologram table, essentially. It's like, hey, check out, he's tailed up here.
Yeah, that moment was wild where he's the abandoned temple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree, though. I felt both things. I was like, oh, shit, Orbalin, let's go.
Yeah.
But also like, yeah, add him to the list. I wasn't expecting to see him. Caleb, I agree. His chapters in The Rising Storm were some of my favorite parts
of
the book.
Yeah.
Also, for you sickos out there, you may know He was in The Rising Storm and also in, I believe, issue 8 of The High Republic.
Yeah.
Which should not have been able to happen. And Cavan said, that's a what we call in the industry a mistake. He basically said, my bad, but I've got a way I can explain it. And he kind of does here by basically just saying Orblin can make copies of himself, which fits with his little Alex Mack superpowers. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're supposed to assume there are other copies of him out there, but he's here and we get to see his powers on full display because he's not in his suit and he's just going crazy. He forms like a defensive wall around people. He's making shapes. Love him. He holds a lightsaber, which is wild.
With a little pseudopod. Just
I love my little flubber Jedi so much.
Yeah. He kind of, in the, where he's holding the lightsaber, he kind of looks like Grimer from, or Slimer
from Slimer, Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Slimer. Yeah. He's cool. A great issue besides that, but he's obviously the highlight for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm so happy he's back. And again, yeah, like Caleb mentioned, it's like, when you think about it, it's like, it makes sense that he's not dead. I don't really remember Grunral, to be honest.
And then there's this guy. I'm like, cool.
He is.
I don't remember them in
14 or 15. I grabbed my omnibus after.
I remember there's like the other one is like New Bakararan, whatever, who like definitely gets leveled.
The other cat one, yeah.
The more Wolf's Bane looking. Yeah. Which I also checked my handy dandy timelines book, which I always keep next to me. And it, you know, it lists deaths on many pages. On for the Fallen Star, it only lists 4 deaths, which of course I think it's got Estella Mardu, Orla Jireny, and 2 others, but
Stellan probably.
Yeah, definitely Stellan.
And Chance Yara maybe.
Maybe. But it does not list.
She got sliced in half, dude. and then crashed into a planet.
Yeah, but it does not list Orbelin. I went to check to see if we were already retconning timelines, but we're not. So we're
I mean, to be honest, like there's like if timelines had that one wrong, it would be like, okay, that's fair.
Also he was assumed dead. I'm cool with that stuff. This isn't Maul getting chopped in half and falling.
And they also, I'm pretty sure, definitely finished writing that book, maybe even before The Fallen Star finished, like when through its final edits. Like, I can't remember exactly that timeline. but yeah. So, anyways.
Yeah, moving on from Orbelin. The other big characters here were the Bond twins. They've been going through it. Yeah, they've been cool characters since the first issue, or I think second issue was maybe when we met them in the first run. And this is their coolest issue yet, but they've had a lot of good moments. They're sort of they're splitting up.
Yeah, it's like they've been literally like finishing each other's sentences, like acting with one mind. And, you know, it seems that probably the experience of encountering the Nameless and having cybernetic surgery done on them has kind of broken that Kotabi bond a little bit. So I'm assuming this is obviously going to have to come to a head at some point.
Seeing them fight would be so cool because they could see each other's thoughts, but I wasn't sure if they were sort of two twins that could see each other's minds or if they were really one hive mind. But the moment where I think it's Tarek says, do not presume to talk for both of us. That's cool where they're like really doubting their bond. It's not somewhere I thought this was gonna go. They've been really strong.
I'm just very interested to see the future of these characters because like as much as I like them, I never felt like there's never something innately compelling about what they were doing in phase one for me. There's like, oh, they're cool characters, but now like I have more of a reason to be invested in their story, and that excites me.
They always felt like they were there to kind of support Keith there. Like they were kind of like, hey, we're kind of backup Jedi to this, and while, you know, like one went with Keith undercover, or one stayed home, one goes to the air, one goes on the ground, so you can kind of have like an easy transition narratively between the two of them. So now it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, one of these will make it out of the war.
Oh man, it's going to be like, I'm sorry, not everything has to be a Harry Potter reference, but it's going to be like Ron Weasley.
George and Fred.
Yeah, one of the Weasley twins.
That's a bummer.
Speaking of bummers, like, do you think Skier's gone up? Like, do you think Skier's gone full Apocalypse Now sort of thing here?
He's got his degenerative brain disease. I don't know what to think of Skier. I think I am more, at least, invested. I was very pessimistic when they decided to bring him back. I am a little bit, I think, more invested. I honestly just, like, for this entire run, I think when they landed on this new planet, I'm like, I'm feeling it now. I haven't honestly been, like, it's been fine, but I haven't been feeling it to a certain degree, and I think now I am really starting to get more into the series as we have more, I guess, just, like, more to chew on with it.
I feel like, well, honestly, I feel like it's, we always have less to chew on, but the first, like, three issues, they're doing so much, like, setup, like, here's, like, a big space battle, and we got, like, 12 different characters fighting, and we have, you know, Lorna, and also, like, this child that is Storm, has a weird Dengar, Drengar powers, but now it's, like, hey, we're just on a quest to save Skier right now, and yeah. We got, like, four characters, and they have a highly dysfunctional party, and we kind of have, like, a direction that we're going in right now.
That's fair. I'm also just, like, obviously we had the Children of the Storm, but I'm just kind of curious of when this is going to really start to more directly tie into what the rest of Phase 3 has going on. Because besides the OZ and that,
I don't know. I'm okay with it telling it's, I mean, the comic in Phase 1 sort of told us something. In Phase 2, it was all very tied together. Mm-hmm. This is at least getting... So far, the whole story stands on its own, which I think is nice. But the one thing with Skier is just, like, it's another one on the list. Also, he already sort of had this flirt with darkness in Phase 1, so I'll be curious to see how this is different. He's freaking jacked in the shot we see of him from behind. Like, I know he's a Trandoshan, so, like, that's innate, but this definitely seems more full on evil than it did in Phase 1.
Oh, I just suddenly realized something. He has both hands.
Yeah, they grow back.
Yeah,
but his last one wasn't growing back because he was because of his
it's
disease.
It's been a year. Yeah,
I guess you're right. I might need to revisit that. Maybe...
Yeah, I think that might be a more obvious sign that his like degenerative brain disease has probably taken control now.
Maybe.
Yeah. We also, like, I don't know if we mentioned that he has, like, actively been antagonizing the other Jedi that have fallen on this planet.
Right.
So, yeah. Interested to see how that plays out. Obviously, I don't know where this is going.
Exactly. But now, I'm excited. I want to say one quick thing. I do love this trope of, like, you know, of Lorna D being along with the party here of, like, hey, we have this obviously bad person in the team now that we have to keep him, like, shackled all the time. But now, you know, we have to still bring him along on the away missions. Like, it's just, like, whenever, like, any other, like, place does this, it's one of my favorite things. And I just love Lorna D's character. So I like seeing that her, like, you know, come on, take these manacles off so we can get into the haunted Jedi temple here together. Yeah. It's fun to see, like, these two characters, like Keeve and Lorna, like, play off each other in a very antagonistical but still working towards a similar goal.
For sure.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see, what do y'all think? Jacob, this conversation is going to sound familiar because we talk about it about Crosshair every week. But is Lorna D headed for redemption? Do we?
I don't think so.
No, absolutely not.
I don't think she's I don't think she's necessarily going to, like, fall back to being a normal Nihil person. I think she carves her own path. I think that is, like, her most likely thing of, like, going back to her origins in Tempest Runner of, like, I'm rejecting, you know, both sides. I'm rejecting, you know, the Nihil. I'm rejecting the Republic. I'm rejecting my family, whatever. Like, I'm going to reject whatever is tried to be put upon me and carve my own path out. And, you know, I don't know how that ends for her. Maybe she ends up doing good things along the way, but I don't think it's because she feels like she wants to be, like, a good guy.
Yeah.
Sure.
Absolutely. I feel like she will find herself more aligned with the Jedi, not because she believes in what they're doing, but more that she wants to bring down Martian Rowe.
And I think, actually, Caleb, you predicted from issue one that she was going to be the one to take down Martian Rowe.
I think I mentioned this, like, a while ago, but yeah, that's my deep, like, fan theory is that I think she's going to be the one that will kill Ro here. Because it makes sense. Like, no one else of the Jedi really should be the one to, like, kill him, because they're all about redemption and, you know, trying to spare life. But, like, she would have absolutely no qualms about gunning down a man after he's been knocked out or captured.
Oh, I think there are definitely High Republic Jedi that would cross that line without hesitation, but I take your point.
Yeah, I feel like that would be a weird place to end it, but I feel like that would be a good ending of the series, is having the ultimate thing that brings down Martian Rowe is the evil that he fomented inside of other people and that he aligned himself with.
Yeah, I'm predicting now it'll be Bree and Toko and John that kill him, the characters from Jedi Brave.
Oh, I was like, wait.
Oh, good.
The little battle ones.
Are you sure not Bree, the purple alien from the Yoda miniseries?
Yes, the other Bree, yeah.
He's like 100 years from being born, but he's going to do it.
Yeah. I think
Nibs might be in this timeline.
Nubs is alive.
Yeah, Nubs
he's
around. Yeah. Well, he's alive as far as we know.
He's probably a Padawan by phase three. So
yeah. It'll be interesting to track Lorna, because I think, at least I hope you're right. I know Star Wars is all about redemption stories, but I sometimes tire of them. Even though it's a good message to present,
right?
But like, one, does she deserve it? No. And two, does she want it? I also think
probably not.
I guess it could be like Hux in Episode 9 is like, I don't care if you win. I just think you have to lose.
Definitely. It's like poetry, you know?
I think she's also one of those characters that is just like, in addition to not caring what side she's on, she's just probably very motivated by self-preservation to a certain extent. So
yeah, for sure.
We'll see where that gets her. You know, she's with Jedi right now, so she's not going to kind of rock the boat too much. But, you know, when she has the opportunity to either get away or realign herself momentarily, you know, maybe she does. She's been working with the Hutts for a while, apparently, before this, so... We shall see.
I say we might get that in the audio drama.
Maybe.
Yeah, we'll definitely see some of that, which I'm excited to see where this story goes throughout the mediums. And hopefully it's coherent enough for people who are a little more casual than us.
Yeah. And hopefully we also don't get complaints of like, this story wasn't in the books. And like, okay, read the comic books. I don't know.
Just read it all, man. It's not that hard.
Yeah, check out the comics.
But all right, any other thoughts on this issue of High Republic?
Things?
Nothing really story wise. We didn't really talk much about the art, which I thought was fantastic.
I think it's
what is
good.
Go ahead.
I miss Ario. He is coming back next issue. I think the problem for me right now is there are some times where the like kid Keeve face and the adult Keeve face get a little too similar.
I could agree with that. Yeah, Keeve has had like three or four designs at this point, because we've seen her across a few time periods.
Uh-huh.
And now she's in her Christina Ariel phase, at least it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But I think this art was solid throughout. It is curious that Ario co-drew issue one, and then we've not seen him since.
And he'll be back for five, and then it'll be back to
for six. Flashback.
And then seven is Marika Cresta. So it's kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
I kind of wish we were, especially for the High Republic and on this last leg, I kind of wish we weren't jumping all around.
Yeah, at least they're all good.
Yeah.
Sometimes villain artists are not.
And it feels consistent. It doesn't feel like we're jumping styles too drastically.
Yeah, they each have different takes on them, because I pulled up issue one to kind of look at, and especially in the way they draw Lorna D, Ario kind of leans more into like the ugly side of her and evil, whereas in this one, she's kind of hot. I mean, if you're into it, certain things, maybe the old one's kind of hot too. Yeah. If you're into being scared, but otherwise, no, I think the art's really good. I want to know where Ario is.
He had to take a couple issues off to do that Kaer San Tekka concept art for Defy the Storm. So,
yes.
Looks great. He plays a Dulcimer. That's freaking dope. Can't wait to meet that character.
I don't know that I realized that was Ario who did the concept art.
It's his style is very I was like, oh, yeah, instantly.
Didn't even think about it because he should be drawing this, which maybe that means that character will be popping up in the Marvel run.
I guess it's possible. Yeah, I mean, it'd be a little strange to do that. I don't know. But cool. Any other final thoughts on this banger issue?
No, the issue is good. Very much.
Can't wait for Agdar, a couple flashbacks to start off next issue and then finally get into the ski fight.
I want Orbelin to solo skier, just like go crazy with it.
Yeah.
I'm also interested to see him and Lorna interact more since she is the one that shot him in the head. So
yes, like twice.
Yeah, their exchange was really good.
Yeah.
She's like, aren't you the one I shot? And then I went back. Well, it does show that scene, which matches the scene from issue 15 of the first run. But then they also reference their fight in The Rising Storm.
Which, it was cool to have that drawn out visually, since obviously we did not see that in the book.
Yeah, so a cool... I love when you get book scenes in the comics. It's nice for the sickos out there who've read it all.
Yeah. But anyways,
next week, we're reading it all.
But he was doing a transition.
Thank you. You tossed that softball up, and I completely whiffed on it.
Smacked it down like you're playing volleyball.
But anyways, we have three issues coming out next week. It's a busy week. We got Darth Vader 44, Mace Windu number 2, and High Republic Adventures number 4, which we are, again, moving fully past Escape from Valo for the book readers out there. So looking good, looking great. But you know, that'll do it for this week's episode of the Cosmic Force. Thank you so much for joining us, and be sure to show some support by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps bring in new members to the community. If you're already a proud member of the United on Patreon, thank you so much. Next, our special thank you to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, Michael Fry, and Raven Bazinski in our High Council, and our captains James T., Ashley Ingalls, Colton Fife, Chris Carrizo, and Sally and Chris Eilerson for all their amazing support. Head on over to Discord, where we're continuing the conversation about all things Star Wars comics in the SW Comics channel. Huge shout out to editor Kyle for all this excellent work getting us to your feed so quickly, and also thank you to Wes for our Utini Network support. To our fantastic listeners, thank you. All right, that's it for us. Keep exploring, keep sharing, and keep having a great time together. May the Force be with you.